Tom's mother died on the 14th of March in the kitchen of the small flat she had lived in for 32 years, of the second of two heart attacks that the consultant had explained, with the careful kindness of his profession, would have been hard to predict and impossible in the event to survive. She was 78. Tom was 42. He had two children, a wife of 14 years, and a job at a bank he liked less and less each year, although he had not, at that point in his life, said so out loud. His mother had lived alone for the previous decade, since the death of his father. There was a daughter, Ellen, but she lived in Manchester with three children and a husband, whose work made the trip down to London a quarterly rather than a monthly proposition. Tom, who lived 20 minutes away, had been the one who visited. He had been the one the hospital phoned. He had been the one who had stood, 4 days later, in his mother's flat with the keys in his hand, and had not, for some minutes, been able to bring himself to put one of them into the lock. In April, Tom and Ellen agreed, through a series of careful telephone calls, that he would clear out the flat over a long weekend. Ellen was working long hours. Tom, in his sister's slightly older sister phrase, was closer to the ground. He took 2 days off work. He believed, on the morning of the first day, that 2 days would probably be enough. He was, of course, wrong about this. Not because the flat was particularly large, but because it contained the kind of objects whose meaning is invisible to a visitor and devastating to a son. There were photographs, in albums and frames, going back to a Donegal christening in 1946. There were letters, in handwriting he did not recognise, from people whose names he had never been given, mostly from the 70s and 80s, when his mother had still been writing letters as a routine matter. There were clothes she had not worn for 20 years, and which, on closer inspection, were not even the clothes he remembered her wearing. They were, instead, a set of more elaborate things, evidently kept for occasions he had not, in his memory, attended. There was a saucepan he remembered her making porridge in when he was 7. There was, he thought, more in this flat than there was in his own house, although his own house contained 4 people, and his mother's flat now contained, very briefly, only him. He worked through the rooms slowly, in the order of difficulty, kitchen first, then living room, then, on the second afternoon, the bedroom. He had been told, by a friend whose father had died the previous year, that the bedroom would be the hardest. He had not understood the warning at the time, and understood it now, in the way one understands warnings, only in retrospect. He sat on the edge of his mother's bed for some minutes before he began. The duvet was the same one she had had since he was a teenager, a pale floral pattern that, on inspection, must have been hideous in its day, and had, by virtue of long association, become beautiful. The bedside table was the small wooden one his father had built in the 70s, in a workshop he had been very proud of, and which had, in some other version of family history, been the place he taught Tom to use a saw. There were 2 drawers in the table. The top one Tom had already opened while looking for a notebook he had remembered seeing once. It was the bottom drawer that he had not yet opened. It contained, in the order in which he found them, a small box of spare buttons, a sewing kit in a tartan tin, a folded silk scarf his father had given his mother in 1976, a pair of woollen gloves that had not, by now, been worn for several winters, and, under the gloves, a small black mobile phone. The phone was an older model, the kind that had been current about 10 years ago, before smartphones had wholly replaced their predecessors, and which some people of his mother's generation had continued to use long after they had ceased to be available in shops. It was switched off. It had a small scratch on the back, which suggested some use, although not perhaps a great deal. Tom turned it over in his hand. He noticed that he was holding it, without thinking, in the slightly delicate way one holds a thing one has not yet decided to investigate. He knew his mother's phone. It was a basic smartphone, 4 years old, which he had bought her himself for her 74th birthday, and which had been handed to him in a small plastic bag at the hospital. It was, at this moment, in the inside pocket of his jacket, which was hanging over the back of a chair in the kitchen. He had not known, at any point in his life, that his mother had owned a second phone. It was his first thought, sitting on the bed with the phone in his hand, that there was probably a perfectly mundane explanation. People sometimes kept old phones for emergencies. People sometimes kept them because they had lost the courage to throw them away. People sometimes kept them, in the case of older people in particular, because the act of disposal of a small electronic device was a more confusing matter than younger generations had reason to know. Possibly the phone had not been used for years. Possibly, when he switched it on, if there was a charger to switch it on with, he would find a flat battery, an empty inbox, and the suggestion of a former life lived, briefly, on cheaper minutes, by a woman who had eventually decided she preferred a smartphone. He found a charger at the back of the drawer. The charger fitted. He plugged the phone in. He sat on the bed and waited. After 8 or 9 minutes, the screen vibrated and lit up. It displayed the time, the date, and a small icon indicating that there was one new message, sent that morning at 9:20. Tom held his thumb above the screen for what felt to him like a long time. Then he tapped the message. It read, "Maria, I have been thinking about you all week. I hope the new tablets are working. I know you said not to worry, but I am, a little. Please tell me you're all right. Call me when you can. M." Tom read it twice. Then he scrolled slowly through the inbox. There were 72 messages, from a single number, going back almost exactly 2 years. They were all signed M. He did not, at this stage, read them. He understood, in the kind of internal stillness which is one of the ways understanding sometimes arrives, that he should not. The most recent had been sent 2 hours ago by a person who, at that moment, did not know that the woman they were addressing had been dead for nearly a month. The remainder were of various ages, but their existence, even in summary, was a kind of information he had no business possessing without his mother's permission, and his mother's permission was no longer a thing that could, by any procedure available to him, be obtained. He sat for some time without moving. The flat was very quiet. The traffic outside the window was the same traffic that had been there an hour before, and would be there an hour later, and would have been there on the morning of the 14th of March, although on that morning he had not been listening to it. He thought about the message, and about M, and about his mother, about the question of what she would have wanted, and about whether the question of what she would have wanted was, at this point, a question that he was entitled to ask. He thought about kindness. The kindest action available to him, he thought, was a short message. "I am very sorry to be writing to you in this way. This is Maria's son, Tom. My mother died of a heart attack on the 14th of March. I am clearing her flat and I have just found this phone. I thought you would want to know." Such a message, sent now, would end the worry of a person who had been waiting for at least 3 hours and more, probably for nearly a month, for a reply to a question they had asked in good faith. There was a word for not sending such a message, and the word, in Tom's reading, was cruel. He thought about privacy. His mother had kept the phone in a drawer, switched off, under a pair of gloves she had not worn for years. She had not mentioned it. She had not given the number to her family. She had, in some quiet and unmistakable way, intended for the relationship with M, whatever its character, to be hers and not theirs. To reply now, even kindly, even briefly, even in the most discreet possible language, would be to overrule that decision on her behalf while she was no longer in any position to be consulted. There was a word for doing this too, and the word, in Tom's reading, was something close to theft. He thought, finally, about himself. He thought about his own marriage, which was not a bad one, and which had not been a particularly faithful one, by certain narrow definitions of the term, in either of the two early years before his elder daughter had been born. He thought about a woman called Sarah, whom he had not seen since 2006, and about whose continuing existence he had been told once by mutual friends and had not, since, made any inquiry. He thought about the letters that woman had written him, and which he had kept, for reasons he had not, until this afternoon, examined in a folder at the back of a filing cabinet at his place of work, where his wife would not, in any conceivable circumstance, find them. He wondered whether, in some other future, his children would one day go through his belongings and find evidence of those letters, and whether they would write to anyone, and how he would feel, even posthumously, about being either spared or exposed. He did not, sitting there on his mother's bed, know what kind of person he was going to be in the next 10 minutes. He had thought he knew. He had thought, for nearly all of the 42 years preceding this afternoon, that he was a person who would do the kind thing. He thought, sitting there, that the question of whether kindness and rightness were the same thing was a question that had not, until now, been forced upon him in any pressing form. He put the phone down on the duvet, very gently, as if it were both more fragile and more dangerous than it was, and stood up and walked to the window. Outside, in the small communal garden of the flats opposite, an old woman was hanging out washing on a line. She had a wooden basket on the grass beside her, and she was working unhurriedly, in the way of people who have done a thing many times, and to whom the doing of the thing has become, by repetition and the accommodation of stiff joints, a small and not unwelcome rhythm. Tom watched her for what was probably less than a minute, although it felt longer. He thought, while watching her, that he had not in his life paid careful attention to a woman hanging out washing, and that it was, in its quiet way, beautiful, and that beauty was a category his ordinary days did not have very much room for. He thought about his mother, hanging out washing in the small back garden of the house he had grown up in, with her hair tied back in the way she had worn it on weekday mornings, and about the version of her he had not, in his life, paid careful attention to. He thought about what he was about to do. Then he turned back from the window and walked across the room and picked up the phone again.